Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, this week, the new stand-up comedy album Mainstream American Comic will be released. It's the latest from New York-based comedian Hari Kondabolu.
My parents are getting older, right? When you have older parents, you have to have difficult conversations with them. What they want for their final wishes, right? Cremation, funeral. These are difficult conversations that I've been having recently. And because I am who I am, I decided it was time to tell my parents what I wanted for my final wishes, right? So I told them, I said, if I'm ever murdered, it's very important that the killer doesn't get the death penalty because I don't believe in state violence. So don't push for the death penalty. I don't want my death to lead to another death, regardless of what this person did to me or to my body. I don't want the killer to get the death penalty. And I remember what my mother said to me. She said, why do you always have to ruin dinner? It's not about dinner, Mom. It's about my final wishes. And they should be respected. You're not that famous, Hari. Nobody's gonna kill you, okay? You don't know that. Dad tells people I'm Aziz Ansari. You don't even know. I could be killed by accident.
The new album is out on the Portland-based record label Kill Rock Stars. Kondabolu tours the world with his comedy, and he's shown up all over movies and television, including late-night talk shows and a writing stint on the FX show Totally Biased with W. Kamau Bell. He and Bell just launched a new podcast called Politically Reactive, and Hari's coming to Chicago for a show at The Hideout on July 30th. Hari Kondabolu is one of the best political comedians working today, and he joins me tonight on The Download. Hari, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Absolutely.
How often do you get through Chicago?
I've been going a lot more often. Usually, it used to be maybe like once a year, and now it's been like, I think it's the third trip I've made to Chicago in some capacity. I did a show with W. Kamau Bell like a few months back for a nonprofit, and I was here, I think, also recently to do the Voices of the People History of the United States, like the Howard Zinn book. Yeah, we had a bunch of different people like reading excerpts of it, so I got to do that in Chicago as well. So I'm in Chicago a lot, but this is the first time I've done like a full stand-up show in about a year.
Oh, that's great. When you come to Chicago, I mean, you've done a lot of different types of shows. Obviously, doing a show in the back of a bar like The Hideout, is that your preferred method of doing a stand-up show, sort of inside to a back room bar kind of thing?
Generally, no. Like, I remember the first time I went to The Hideout to do a show, I was nervous. I'm like, oh, it's a back room of a bar. It's not like, I like theater spaces, like things that are intimate and where people, you know, are there to see you and they didn't stumble in. And also, like, you know, there's standing room. And I know, like, usually with standing room shows, like, people get tired and they get frustrated, especially later at night. So, you know, I was really nervous about those shows that I died out. And they went great. You know, there's something about that venue and the energy that's there. And it is fairly intimate. Like, I had a killer couple of shows last time I was there, and I wanted to do it again. And plus, that's such a legendary venue. Like, The Hideout is incredible and has such an incredible history in terms of, like, both activism and the performers that have gone through there. Like, it's the perfect space for me.
Well, that's one thing about us Chicagoans. We can stand for an hour.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that we're good at. Well, you have a pretty diverse background. Before doing comedy, you were an organizer for immigrant rights in Seattle. How does having a life outside of comedy and the arts, how does that help your stand-up?
It certainly gives you perspective. I think that's a really key part of this. I think when you get caught up in the industry part of it or just writing, you forget that the world is happening around you. And that's why sometimes, like, you'll see comics do stand-up and so much of their act is about the industry or about famous people they've met, or it becomes so narrow because they haven't actually lived a real life in a while. And luckily I'm not super famous. So, like, I have complete access to the real world and kind of have health insurance. So yeah, I mean, like, it certainly is important to do. And I think in Seattle, it's, you know, I still go back there constantly just because it's the place where I started doing stand-up, the place where I organized. A lot of my best friends are there. And they're folks that kind of keep me in check, which I think is important. Folks that keep my ego in check and also challenge me when I make a joke and maybe it's like, it's a little wonky. It doesn't quite have the tone that I normally have or have the ideas that I normally have, or maybe some of the shots are, you know, because I try to like make really targeted strikes to the things I want to tackle. And I don't want to, you know, hurt somebody else without, you know, like, I want intention behind the things I'm saying. So, you know, having people that, like, really can question you is important to me because I think as a stand-up, you know, when you're hanging around with other stand-ups, there's a bottom line approach. The funny is not funny. And I haven't been that guy in a long time. Like, I wanted to say something and be funny. It has to be funny, but, like, I wanted to say what I wanted to say.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, you hear a lot of comedians will take out new material on the road and let the audience be the judge or like you said, other stand-up comedians. But it is important for a comedian to have an inner circle that's going to be able to say if you've crafted the joke in the way that you want to.
I think so. I mean, comedians definitely, like, we all give each other tags for jokes and ideas, and that's certainly part of it. But, you know, the stuff I talk about, some of it isn't just comedic angles. It's also I need, like other perspectives to think about when I'm trying to complete the joke. The jokes I can get to. It's the shaping the point of view, the argument that, you know, can be the harder part.
We're speaking with stand-up comedian Hari Kondabolu. He is going to be at the Hideout on July 30th. He's got a new album that's coming out this week. You know, for you growing up as an Indian-American comic in Queens, you know, it's probably hard to find people, I guess, to relate to in a way. There weren't a lot of Indian stand-ups. Talk about that and what drove you to want to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah, I mean, there weren't that many examples, especially when I started. Like, I didn't know any, like, I hadn't heard of any Indian-American stand-up comedians when I started. I was 17. I was in high school. And the reason I wanted to do stand-up to begin with is I saw Margaret Cho do stand-up on TV. This is back in, like, the early days of Comedy Central when they had, like, eight things they just kept repeating right. over and over again.
That and Kids in the Hall, right?
Right, exactly. Like, in reruns of SNL. But they played that Margaret Cho's HBO special where she's wearing a leather bodysuit. Like, it felt like every week. And I would watch it over and over. And in addition to just thinking she was hilarious, it was also, like, amazing for me to see somebody who wasn't black, white, or Latino, right? Like, this is an Asian-American person talking about her immigrant parents, talking about growing up in San Francisco, and people were listening and valuing what she had to say. So as an early role model, she certainly was that. But there weren't any, like brown people I could see or relate to. And, you know, it's kind of funny, like, when you're in that situation, you become the comic that the 12-year-old you wanted to see. Because there were no examples. You know, there weren't, you know, you end up having to be the role model for the next generation. And it's been kind of a cool era to see, like, Aziz and, like, Cousin Minaj and all these other mm-hmm. South Asian comics and actors and Russell Peters. Like, it's been cool to see so and such diverse voices, too. It's great.
Well, I mean, I read somewhere that when you would go to comedy clubs as a kid, they would always put you up in the front row so the white yeah. comics would have the guys to point out and make fun of. And there was never anyone that would represent you to be the counterpoint.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love the Comedy Cellar. Let me just, like, preface that with this. Like, it's still, you know, it's a club. I got asked to perform there years ago, and I said no, because even though I've been on TV and all this other stuff, I still see it as a sacred ground almost for comedy. And so I just didn't have the guts to do it. But, yeah, me and my friends, we used to go there regularly, because once you were 18, you were allowed to go. And there was an internet offer where you could just buy two sodas and watch a Tuesday night show, which is the night where, like, a lot of the comics are working out material. So you got to see Marin and Todd Barry and Colin Quinn and Jim Norton and Greg Giraldo. I mean, the big list goes on of amazing comics who, and you're seeing them develop stuff. You know, it was incredible, but they always stick us in the front. And initially we were excited, like, this is so cool. We're kids from Queens. We traveled an hour 45 to get to the Village. We're sitting in the front row of the Comedy Cellar. And then you realize, oh, this is we're fodder now. Like, we are prominent. We have the light on us. We're brown. Like, it was every cliche thing you could say. Now, it was at the time, maybe it wasn't as cliche for everybody else. It was for us. Yeah, I mean, we ended up just constantly getting, like, drilled. And, you know, the first time, it's kind of cool. Oh, we get to be part of the show. But then every time, you're like, we're just props. This sucks. And there was never another voice. There was never any, like, when people tell you to take a joke, it's like, fine. But I wish there was somebody else who could do the other part
right,
of it.
Right, right.
Where you were actually going after, like, this is what it's like to be a person of color in a white world. And so it was kind of cool for me to, like, be able to be that comic. Like, I wish I was able to be there after some of the things I saw. I wish I was able to perform after some of those comics.
Well, you take on a lot of political and social issues in your act. And I read somewhere that you take on the philosophy of issues like immigration or racism or poverty. And those are serious issues. But in your act, you try not to take them seriously, that you can be a comic voice in approaching some things that are complicated in our society.
You have to be a comic at the end of the day, you know, and I think if you're going to talk about heavy things, like, you got to make sure there's enough, release valves in a bit. You have to pace yourself. You have to make sure there's a payoff. Otherwise, that's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to talk about, yeah. Like, whether it's gun violence or war or anything else. If you're going to take that, you better have some jokes. You know, I think Irwin started to really develop a voice, wanted to talk about things like cared about. I don't think I got that, because even though I knew how to write jokes, I was so passionate. It's the first time I was 19 or 20, the first time I really thought about things critically. All I wanted to do was share what I learned and what I cared about with everybody in that room. And I stopped telling jokes. And I mean, that's the worst thing. You know, you don't want to see a comic simply ranting about things without jokes. Right. That's not what people pay to see. You know, there's town halls for that. There's video blogs for that now. There's places where you can just rant and showcase that to the world. But if you're a comic, be a good comic. Right. Like, actually know how to do the job of being a comic. And if you don't have jokes with your ideas, yeah, write a blog. You know, there's other ways to do it.
There's other things out there for you. There's other outlets.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, like right now with everything that's happening in our world when it comes to protests and Black Lives Matter and just the unrest that's happening around the country, it always seems to be that comics quickly can percolate to the top and be the voice of some of this change, or at least be in a position to lead a movement online or, you know, in social media and those kind of places. And you've been able to do that because you've taken on politicians, you've gotten Twitter wars with from your couch. So talk about the idea of being a politically and socially relevant comedian in this day and age with social media and whatever, when the country's going through so much stuff.
Well, I mean, one of the great things about stand-up is that it's immediate. So something can happen that day, and that night you're on stage telling jokes about it. It's that fresh. I don't know any other art forms that can do that. But Twitter, like, is like the next step. Like, it's even more immediate than stand-up. Like, you just throw things out there. And sometimes that's extremely irresponsible and dangerous because your thoughts aren't always fully formed. But it also means that when a moment happens, you find a way to kind of say something that encapsulate a key part of it, like a key opinion or a hypocrisy you see or poor coverage. Like, you can immediately call bullshit, like, really quickly in a way that you couldn't before. And stand-ups are good at calling bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what we do for a living. We call bullshit. We find inconsistencies. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's not surprising that stand-ups are built to do that. And also, like, you know, we're not supposed to be wonky. We're not supposed to sound like experts. We're supposed to be able to get something quick and thoughtful across and have something to say, but in a joke form. That's a lot more easier to digest than whatever you're seeing on CNN or MSNBC or whatever.
Right, and I mean, and with the advent of podcasting, and you're obviously, your podcast, Politically Reactive, but the other stuff where there just seems to be so many outlets for comedians to not only have the crafted joke, but to be able to add their POV to what's happening around the world in instantaneous fashion.
Yeah, I mean, podcasting is it's changed a lot of things. From a business standpoint, it means that, you know, people come to your shows knowing who you are, and not only knowing your stand-up, but knowing who you are.
Right.
And that's one of the best things about when you get to a certain place as a stand-up comedian, where to some degree you don't need to set everything up in terms of this is who I am and this is what I believe in every single thing. The audience knows you. They know kind of the kind of angles you're going to take, and they might laugh at a joke because, yeah, that's something this guy would say. And I feel like podcasting gives you some of that. Like, you know, podcasting for Marc Maron, for example, his audience grew exponentially. And not only that, he was getting like single ticket buyers, which right. means that like people were going without their friends. They were going by themselves because they listened to his podcast alone. If nobody wants to go, who cares? It's not for them. It's for me. And that's incredible to have fans like that. So from a business perspective, it leads to like these incredible fans who are really loyal and really appreciate what you do. And also, you know, creatively, you know, again, it's like the immediacy of discussing something, whether it's something serious or something silly. And I think also for me, interacting with another comic who has similar sensibilities, like I'm going to be writing stuff without meaning to write stuff. things are going to be clicking and you're engaging in things in a way that, you know, we're alone a lot. A lot of it is solitary. It's cool to be able to actually talk through an idea with somebody you respect and love. So, yeah, it's really been an incredible time period. And I feel in a lot of ways we're really fortunate because we don't need to do what previous generations did, which is just do the road constantly and just get beaten down and depend on people in Hollywood to make the choices of whether this is a person to go to or not. We can just do it ourselves.
It opens so many avenues. The new stand-up comedy album, Mainstream American Comic, is going to be released this week for New York-based comedian Hori Kondabolu. I can't thank you enough for talking to us tonight. You're going to be at The Hideout on July 30th. Hori, thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Hey, man. This was really fun. Thank you for having me.